all the facilitators out there, so much of it comes down to you. You sharing genuinely and creating an opportunity for other people to do that. And that's what you're doing right here. You know, fortunately, I already know and trust you and I'm willing to talk about these kinds of things. But if you hadn't asked the question, then I wouldn't have said anything about it.
Welcome to The Facilitator's Guide. This is a two-part episode with my longtime friend and mentor, Scott Swedberg. In part two, we'll focus on the stories of meaningful experiences that happened in Scott's life, and he'll share what it's like to scale a career coaching business, and the most powerful moment in our conversation when Scott shares stories honoring his mom by making meaningful experiences. And that's a pretty emotional part, and it's a must-listen-to part of the episode. This is a special episode because Scott's been a mentor to me through most of the key transitions I've experienced, both in life and in my career. He's the first person to introduce me to Bulletproof Coffee, showing me that it's cool to put butter in your coffee. He's the person who convinced me that a kettlebell was the only piece of essential exercise equipment that I needed. And I used to sleep on his couch in Chicago during the early days while he was starting the Job Sauce. While recording, I promised Scott a glorious WWE-style introduction. So here goes. Our next guest on The Facilitator's Guide, CEO of the Job Sauce, Scott Swedberg. Enjoy the episode.
I wanted to transition to a little bit of a different topic, and to go back to a little bit of what we were talking about earlier with your journey with the Job Sauce. You sort of represent a really powerful intersection of a couple things. You represent, you know, somebody who started their own business based off something that they want to really good at and really enjoy, and has sort of found like that marriage of like that quote unquote dream job, and you've created that yourself. But on the other hand, it's also like very much so thematic to the podcast as somebody who has loved facilitating and empowering people through helping them discover new things about themselves. And for you, that context happens to be jobs, mm-hmm. but you have such a vast experience with that. But I think one of the most powerful things for people listening to the podcast who, you know, love facilitating or love speaking or love coaching and consulting is that you've sort of gone from creating that as yourself and then building a structure involving so many other people and expanding that impact around that particular topic. And so I'd love to dive in more to just your journey, taking something that you were really passionate about and knew that you wanted to help create with people, giving them a dream job. And then what that was like, taking the Job Sauce from just Scott Swedberg to a whole team of people aligned around that mission and giving people a dream job. What was like the journey like to go from just you to a whole team of coaches, a whole team of people helping support this mission and these services? We're back.
we're back. And we're back after this message from our corporate sponsors.
No, to mention, like, I've had a chance to gotten to know Eric since 2013 when I was interviewing for the job that you were hiring me for, and I've got a chance to meet Aaron a few times, and those two are definitely just a force.
Oh my God.
A lot of things.
Yeah, they're so good. And it took me a while to kind of give them credit in a way. And I've talked to Eric about this a bunch, and this was a huge transformation of the Job Sauce. But like when I started the Job Sauce, like I was grieving my mother's death, I was depressed. So being able to, and obviously I wasn't making any money doing the Job Sauce at the time. Burned through all my savings, had to get a loan. It was a lot of hard work, and when I was looking back on that, like the Job Sauce was a monument to my overcoming this really dark, difficult period of my life. So it was impossible for anyone to provide enough value to make me see them as partners in any capacity. And that really stifled the growth of the Job Sauce. And fortunately, and really thanks to Eric and Aaron and Jessica, and my fiance Lauren, like working through some of that and recognizing the source of that dysfunction and then being able to address it. and, you know, I'll give myself some credit too. You know, that was not an easy thing for me to do either.
Yeah.
That's probably, you know, if when we talk a year from now and the job sauce is 2 to 5 times bigger than it is today, that's going to be why. It's because I was finally able to recognize that I was always making them earn it, never being able to get there. Mm-hmm. And finally, I'm just like, nope, you guys are my partners. And, you know, we're going to interact accordingly. And we're, like, we're friends, too. And we're building something awesome. And they are so much more bought into what's going on. And not to say, like, they weren't doing stuff, but it was more like they were just doing the next thing as opposed to being inspired and empowered to, like, really bought into what we were doing and acting accordingly. Like, it's different when you're just jazzed about the mission and what's going on than if you're just doing your job.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's why companies care so much about hiring people who are aligned with their values and their mission. And it can be hard to keep that in a big company, but you know, they do their best because when people are bought in and inspired, you barely even need to, all you need to do is make sure that they don't go way overboard.
Like what you shared there, that is such a, I feel like a powerful insight for somebody who is starting something like this that is so intimate and focused on people sort of unleashing the next sense of their self, to be able to create that type of partnership with people that can really contribute to the success of the organization in like a really creative way that opens up all these different new opportunities and possibilities. And like for people in sort of like the service provider or like individual coaching and learning development space, to be able to open that up has like a huge impact on the scale of
oh, yeah.
what you can do for people.
Definitely.
Whoa.
And that was, yeah, and there's some, it's really hard to, there are ways to do it, but it's really hard to like create that and manufacture it. It's almost like the way I see it, I think specifically with like our career coaches, they need to already be all about making a difference in these people's lives, changing lives through landing a new dream job.
Yeah.
And then it's my job to just give them what they need and not suck the joy out of it. Because like I'm really lucky that so many of them have come from other pretty reputable organizations that do similar work, but usually they've sucked the joy out of it. It's like you have to track like every 10 minutes of like what, like every 10, 15 minutes you have to like report on what you've been doing to like keep track of hours and stuff. And that tediousness of tracking really like sucks the joy from what you're doing. Or if you have so many people you can't connect on a personal level, so you can't really feel like you're making a personal difference or recognize it, it just sucks the joy out of it. So I'm like, okay, all the reasons that they stopped working for that company and started working for us, I'm going to go ahead and avoid those like the plague. And just like, because that's the core of us delivering results. If a career coach is not amped to change this person's life and do whatever it takes, they're not going to do a good job. Like the difference, that fine line is the difference between somebody landing a job, being over the moon about it, telling all their friends, us getting referrals, and the machine goes on, versus them not landing the job, being pissed about it, writing a negative review, demanding a refund. Like, that is the fine line. If the coach is empowered and passionate about making the difference in people's lives by any means necessary, it's all going to work. They're just going to be that person, and it's going to work. But if that gets sucked out of it, it's like pulling teeth to get them to do anything, and they're not going to enjoy doing it, and they're going to be doing a job they hate. And I certainly don't want to have anyone who hates their job if they're working for the job sauce. I mean, that's just so against what we're about.
Yeah.
But it I really feel like it starts with, why does this person want to do that? Why are they so amped to begin with? And let's make sure we don't suck the joy out of it. And if joy starts to leave it, we can't step over that. We need to look at why. And maybe it has nothing to do with the job sauce. Maybe it has to do with something else in their lives. And we're not going to step over that either. And that's something that I know is going to be a bit of a challenge as the job sauce grows, is how do you maintain that kind of commitment to you, Patrick, love your job, even if the thing that's making you not love your job is, like, some personal relationship completely unrelated.
Mm-hmm.
Because people don't operate in a vacuum. Like, who you are professionally and who you are personally are not unrelated. You know, just like grieving for my mom's death made me especially shitty at my job. Those two things are connected. And it's not a typical thing to, as an employer, to try to make a difference for people in that way. It's complicated. It's hard. And I don't even know if there's, like, a legal line that I need to be aware of. It just doesn't matter right now because most of us are friends and, you know, we get to the heart of it and we address it, and it's not like we're providing therapy or something where there's, like, a psychological, like, moral, ethical line that we're crossing. But that's hard. It's really hard for employers to keep their employees motivated when it has nothing to do with the job itself. So good luck to everybody else. We've got people who are making that difference still. We just got to know how to scale it. But my coworkers are way better at that than me. So
heck yeah.
I just need to empower them to do it.
I wanted to ask you a couple quick questions about, because I think one of the other key parts about this podcast is about meaningful experiences and bringing in people that are really great at being able to do that. And I think, you know, one of the things that you've mentioned a lot about is about your mom and what she's meant to you. And I wanted to just, like, learn more about because I know one of the things that you love doing it with is honoring your mom and memorializing your mom and the experience and relationship that you two have. And I wanted to know, like, what, like, because I know you have the Memorial Scholarship honoring mm-hmm. your mom. Can you share a little bit about that and some of the ways in which you've helped memorialize that experience and the different things that you love honoring about your mom?
Yeah. First, I need to recognize that a lot of that work and kind of memorialization, if you will, is stuff that I've just kind of continued on with.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that I created, so I want to give a shout out to all the people who did that. And my mom was, you know, worked in the same school district for 30 years, and many of the people, there are many people who are still working there who worked with my mom for 25, 30 years. All the people in the special ed department, especially a woman named Nancy Phileas, who is just a wonderful human and I'm sure has provided support in more ways than I can recognize right now. And then, I mean, the parents of all of my close friends from growing up, like, they started the scholarship, you know, without any of us knowing. And, you know, it's just, like, it's crazy to look back on all the things that so many people did in that circumstance. Even, like, there's a little coffee shop in my hometown called Daily Harvest. And the owner, Brittany, you know, we would go in all the time before my mom got sick. Anytime I was home, that's where we would go. My mom and dad would go there for breakfast on weekends. You know, if my mom got out of work early, they would go there and maybe grab a coffee there. And she started, you know, she would know we were coming or we came with such regularity. She, like, made this reserved sign that had her names on it. It's like, put it on the table that we always sat at. And it was just such, like, such a touching thing for people to care in that kind of way. And there's a laundry list of things. Like, I still don't even know who did it, but, like, around Christmas time, you know, we didn't have, my dad and I didn't put up any direct decorations. My mom died in the beginning of December, so Christmas came around. We didn't even put up a tree, which was kind of depressing. But somebody, like, made this little tree of lights, kind of, like, just, you know, two pieces of wood nailed together with, like, a stem going up and lights running down it, and plugged it in, and we came back from something, and it was just on our lawn, and it was, like, unbelievable, the kind of support that that people gave us. And I can't even remember, you know, 10% of the stuff that went on. But so much of what I've done since then has stemmed from someone else starting it. someone else doing it, and, you know, when I was kind of ready or prepared to then go do it myself. So something like my mom's scholarship, you know, she was dedicated to making a difference in the lives of children who had learning differences, that they just read or learned differently than other kids. And, you know, I think people are a lot more, you know, a lot more woke to it these days, to use a young hip term. But back then, I mean, it used to be such a commonplace thing to call, you know, a kid with a learning disability a retard. Like, Jesus, like how hurtful that was. And things have evolved a lot since then, but it's still really hard to account for learning differences in a education model like we have, where classroom sizes are getting bigger and bigger and bigger when they need to be getting smaller. So my friend's parents created a scholarship in my mom's name to help either kids with learning differences go to college or kids who are going to college to become special ed teachers. And it used to be that I didn't like thinking about my mom's death or about my mom other than in, like, really happy circumstances. And that's still kind of the case, which is going to be especially hard when I'm getting married soon. But I found this to be a great way to honor my mom without really getting sad. And it's like any type of weird, crazy thing I was going to do, my mom would absolutely love me to use that as an opportunity to raise money to like make a difference for people. And, you know, fortunately I've had a lot of friends who have made an example for me of different ways I could do that. But, you know, like me and my buddies were going to do this polar plunge one year, you know, January 1st in, you know, Boston, Massachusetts, jumping in the Atlantic when, you know, it's like practically slush water. And it's like, well, people love to donate to causes, you know, you just give them a chance, even if it's $5, if it's $50, some people will surprise you and donate $1,000, you know, give them an opportunity to make it, to be connected to someone who already made a huge difference in their lives or represents a huge difference. So I found that I can make a big difference for other people and while also making a difference for myself, paying homage to my mom and who she was by going and doing something that most people would typically donate to, like a polar plunge, or, you know, I went on a bachelor party where the guy gives a year notice, but we did a half Ironman for his bachelor party. God, that was a special bachelor party. And I was like, you know what? 70.3 miles. Let's get our lifetime donations up to $7,030. And, you know, why not? This is a very easy way to raise money for my mom's scholarship. And it gives a lot of people an opportunity to feel connected to my mom. Because, you know, people die. And when they've had a really positive impact in your life, that can be really, really hard. And I want to keep my mom alive as much as I reasonably can because of the difference she's made for so many people and how she shaped me. So if I'm already going to be doing something, or if I can go out of my way to do something that's really no big thing to me, but it puts my mom and the difference she made back into the minds of people that she made a difference for, and maybe it inspires one of them to do something else impactful and meaningful, then, you know, that's a good thing, and that's an opportunity that I don't want to miss.
Thank you so much for sharing about your mom. And so much of what I admire about you and our relationship is so much about how you live your life with intention and with love and with doing things that make people better or to honor people. And, like, to just hear that story is just so amazing.
And edit out the crying. No, leave it.
Yeah, probably. Oh, God.
No, I mean, and it's, I think it's so important for people to have a space to share things that are meaningful to them. And that's, to talk about, and kind of the intention of this whole podcast, how do you create these kinds of experiences that make a meaningful and lasting difference for people? And, you know, to all the facilitators out there, so much of it comes down to you. You sharing genuinely and creating an opportunity for other people to do that. And that's what you're doing right here. You know, fortunately, I already know and trust you and am willing to talk about these kinds of things, but if you hadn't asked the question, then I wouldn't have said anything about it. Creating those opportunities for people to share openly, usually by doing so yourself, and talk about an arrow in the quiver, a tool in the toolkit for facilitators or people trying to create a meaningful experience. You can't expect other people to be authentic and raw and open, and those are the things that change people. It's those kinds of sharing and experiences that change people. You got to create those opportunities because they don't just happen.
Mm-hmm.
Not unless they're creative, because especially in today's society, you want to, you know, post the happy things on Instagram or just, you know, put a filter over it, and it's a lot less common for people to share authentically, especially in a way that reaches a lot of people. So it's kind of a nod to what you're doing and what so many facilitators do is so important, because it creates that outlet for people. And most people don't have that this is the only chance they get to do it. Or maybe it's their foray into being able to share about these things for the first time. So yeah, if you can create those experiences for people, you make a huge, huge difference for people. I wish I could point back to what experience allowed me to feel so open to share these kinds of things and thank that person explicitly, but no, if you're the kind of person who does that, you're doing good things for people.
We'll be right back after taking a quick break. All right, and we're back. Okay. Scott, you're a longtime facilitator. You're an artist of making meaningful moments in a number of different areas of your life. What has been the most meaningful experience that you've either been to or created yourself?
Few come to mind. I'm going to start with the first one chronologically that I can think of. And that is something that was at my first employer. You can think of it almost like the onboarding period. And because we worked in higher ed, you know, I had the whole summer to like get ready to start going to college campuses and doing our work. So we call it summer development. And it was effectively packing in how to be a high-achieving professional, you know, to, like, what most people don't even get to till they're in their 30s in a couple months over the summer, except it's, like, 24, 25-year-olds delivering it to 22-year-olds. And I was like, how do you – and it still kind of blows my mind that we were even able to deliver this, or that, like, my bosses were able to deliver it to me at the time, that then I went and delivered it as well. And I think the key was that to start, everyone had the right expectations going into it. It was like, this is going to be one of the hardest things you've ever done, and it's going to be one of the most meaningful and long-lasting. It's the kind of thing where now, unless I'm really paying attention to it, I'm completely unaware of the total impact it's had on me, because it's just like part of who I am. How I communicate, like, you know, what I put in emails, the speed at which I respond to certain things, how I conduct myself in front of a room. And from a facilitating standpoint, you know, I was used to, in college, you know, president of my fraternity, get up in front of, you know, 80, 90 guys and, you know, deliver updates and, you know, facilitate conversations and that sort of thing. But, so I was, you know, I had some skill in front of a room, but it was more like I just didn't, you know, pee my pants in front of the room. Like, that's really what was going on. Like, I was just
that was
barely
the bar
getting
of success.
Through it. Yeah.
There's no pee today.
Yeah, there's no pee today, and we covered the agenda that we needed to. I didn't completely lose control of the room, which, you know, I mean, talk about a test. Doing that in front of a bunch of fraternity guys is pretty tough, but that's essentially what this summer development was training us to do, because we'd be going into universities and fraternity chapters and being up in front of a group of guys who sometimes hated us. Because, you know, we're a big, bad national fraternity coming in to tell us what to do and ruin our fun. You know, this was training for how to how to build relationships with the leaders of a chapter, genuine ones, so you could actually provide support in a way that would make a difference. And sometimes to do that at a full chapter level where you've sometimes got upwards of 150 guys listening to you talk, and to be able to facilitate something in a way that didn't completely crash and burn as a 22-year-old is really impressive looking back on it. And the fact that there were 24, 25-year-olds teaching that to people is even more impressive. You know, it's like such a level of subconscious competence now that I struggle to encapsulate it without just talking about specific, you know, techniques for working a room like iBrain and, like, you know, it's... But what it ultimately did was, and continues to do, is prepare pretty young guys to go out and make a difference facilitating, regardless of what group they're in front of. Now, to ask the questions and to have the structures that are going to minimize the flops and the downside. So that was pretty impactful, because it not only taught me what was effective, but coached me through where I was to passable to go out and, you know, live out of my car and do this for 9 months.
I was recently doing an activity where I was reflecting on, so this is out of this, he's a speaker, his name's Drew Dudley. He was the director of leadership at University of Toronto. Just give him some background context for listening. He wrote a book called Day One Leadership, and he has this activity at the end that helps you sort of identify your personal values and then a methodology to generate ways to live into them every day. So a very intensive, like, self-reflection exercise, and one of them was, like, think of the top five happiest moments of your life. And the summer development experience was, like, I was like, that's a top five. Like, the intense learning, the growth, the commitment to supporting each other through that, and, like, just the commitment for everybody in that office building that you want the best for them in every aspect of their life.
The relationships built?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, other than how some relationships were kind of restored and really hardened forever from, you know, my mom being sick. I mean, the fact that some of those relationships for, like, 1 year of working together, sometimes two, compared to, like, college relationships, the fact that those were so strong, 100% attributed to summer development. Mm-hmm. And the... Because then, like, for 9 months, we didn't, like, barely ever saw each other. Right?
Yep.
It was, like, you know, two, three months of really intense time together, and then it was, like, virtually every waking moment you're spent with your team. So that was part of it, you know, the time together.
Mm-hmm.
But then to solidify those relationships so we stayed in touch all year long, and whenever we saw each other, it was like, thank God we finally get to see each other again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like managing a long-distance relationship, except you got it with, you know, 12, 13, 14 dudes, when that's not your typical romantic relationship, is like a pretty wild thing that it was able to be built that mm-hmm. way. I still don't even know what to attribute to. Probably all the time together plus the structures that were put in place. But, wow, yeah. Talk about transformative. I mean, relationships that I still have very close to this day, and people that would be in my wedding, bunch that would be invited because of that experience alone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's transition then a little bit to the other side of facilitating, when the things go sideways or wrong. Can you share a story of your maybe biggest coaching or facilitating flop where your session either bombed or went sideways or not as you expected? And, you know, did you recover? If not, what happened? If you did, what happened? Like, share a story of when things go sideways.
Oh, man. So, fortunately for me, well, the reality is my... difficulty of facilitating experiences hasn't really increased that much. Where, like, what I facilitate these days, to me, doesn't feel all that more challenging or difficult. So I'm not really growing in that skill set, but that's not really a priority for me. So a lot of my flops come from the early days of facilitating in this first role out of college, going around to these fraternity chapters who see you as the enemy and you're trying to teach them something to be helpful, and you're like, well, why won't they just participate and, like, be part of it? Sometimes you're, you know, it feels like you're set up for failure unless you do all the legwork to build the relationships, to get the buy-in from the right people ahead of time. You know, and that was crucial for us in those roles. But the first one that comes to mind is one of my first recruitment workshops I ever facilitated. It was at our fraternity chapter at University of Southern California. That chapter was shut down not too long after, I think the next year. And, you know, I had this template workshop that I did not customize at all to my audience. I did not read the room, and I just powered through, and it was just like every single person I looked at did not want to be there. And I'm stunned nobody got up and walked out. In fact, somebody might have, and I just blacked it out. Like, it was that bad where it was just like trying to talk to a wall. People who have just, like, loathed you and were only there because someone they respected a lot more than you forced them to be there. But they didn't have to like it. And it was just, like, very simple question. Ask a question of the group, try to get someone to answer, and nobody would. Pulling teeth, and you just, like, nothing you can do to goad them into participating. Nothing. So then you just move on. And then eventually you work up the courage to do it again. And I finally got someone to raise their hand to answer what I thought was a really simple question. And they answered, and it was like one of those I can't even remember it. It was one of those classic responses that the class clown would give just to, like, really disrespect the teacher and have everyone else laugh. And I was like, why am I even doing this? Like, if you don't want me here, like, why am I even here? It's just like nobody wanted to be there. I didn't want to be there. I didn't do any of the legwork to make that any better. I didn't customize what I was saying to them. A lot of the things I was saying, as I was saying them, I knew wouldn't resonate with them because it just didn't really apply to how they did things. It was so foreign that I would have had to do a completely different workshop just to work up to that concept. Yet I'm just trying to, like, cram it down their throat, and I wouldn't say I deserved what I got, but, you know, it's no surprise. Given I didn't customize anything, I didn't do the legwork, I didn't do anything. So it was just like 30 minutes of me standing up there with a flip chart trying to call on people, crickets or smirks, people on their phones, people pulling up their laptops to do work. It's like, what's even, I'm just talking in front of a room of people who don't want to be there. Why? And that was pretty tough.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things I could have done differently. But at the time, you know, just because I just graduated from not peeing my pants in front of a room, to work with a whole completely hostile environment with not enough education to be able to do things on the fly, that was a pretty epic flop. I can still picture the room that I was in and where people were sitting, and oh man.
But you blacked out the comment from the class clown.
Yeah, I don't even remember. I mean, I didn't even learn my lesson. I called on someone else a separate time, and they did the same thing.
Oh my gosh.
I shouldn't learn my lesson at all. I kept powering through. I think they came to respect me more for just, like, not giving up.
Yeah.
A lot of good that did, but maybe it made a difference for a couple people. I don't know. But yeah, no, I blacked out most of that.
Yeah.
It wasn't overtly disrespectful, just, like, non-participatory or helpful.
Yeah. Wow. So many lessons to tease out of that story there.
Yeah.
I think the comments you're making at the beginning of, like, the emphasis on relationships and doing the legwork ahead of time to make that, you know, I guess, to one, understand, like, is the content you're going to be delivering going to be relevant to their context, but also two, to have, like, people that are kind of bought in or allies in there to help, like, enable that room. Like, there's definitely a lot of lessons that I hope people will be able to tease out and apply to their own practice listening into that.
Yeah, and I think it helps to start with, why are these people here to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
Is it an audience where people are, like, bought in to be able to do it? And, like, what are the expectations? Because then you can account for those things. Like, how are people going to show up? How are they going to, like, what is going to be their way of being in this to start off? Like, what is your baseline to work with? And then how does that map to what you're trying to deliver? What are the outcomes? And then, you know, you just got to course correct. Like, if people are there against their will, you're going to have to do a lot of work to get them to a point where they're going to listen to anything. And having one takeaway and have them not hate you at the end is going to be the win. Like, you're going to get more opportunities to talk to them? If so, like, in retrospect, I should have not just gone for it and tried to deliver this stuff from the beginning. I should have done something to make them feel like they were truly listened to and that I wasn't some evil person just because they associated me with a bunch of people who, like, wanted to ruin their happy experience.
Yeah.
And I didn't do any of those things. But then again, yeah.
Well, that's a really hard, like... That's a really hard piece of awareness to have, like, in that moment, because, like, also, too, like, for you as a facilitator, like, us, like, you could be so attached to, like, I have this content, I need to facilitate it because I know they're going to be better off for it, and, like, that being driving, like, the delivery of that, and not so much having the awareness of, like, well, actually, I need something different, and then how do I do that? Because that's, like, several orders and layers of thinking to do that, and, like, I feel like even really experienced, really talented, you know, experienced facilitators still make that mistake.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe it. I mean, it's a hard thing to do, and sometimes you get a mixed audience. And how much do you want to take away from the people who are 100% bought in to get, you know, a middle ground to a place where you can make a difference for them?
Mm-hmm.
God forbid you try to go after the bottom 10% to get them bought in. Like, what are you sacrificing for the other 90% of people? Yeah, it's hard, man. That's why I don't facilitate that much.
Yeah. So along this topic now, do you have any, like, quick common mistakes that you see in coaching other than, like, not knowing the audience and some of the things that we've just talked about?
In coaching, like, for one-on-one stuff?
Yeah, like, I guess, you know, the topic of facilitating, I guess we could equate coaching to having a one-on-one sort of facilitated dialogue.
Yeah. Like, so a few things come to mind, but the one I'll stick with right now is the importance of action. That in a vacuum, like, the facilitated experience is great, but life doesn't happen in a vacuum. And the difference you can make for people in that moment, as much as we'd like to think that it is going to be mind-altering and stick with them forever, it just doesn't. There are very few things that we do that forever stick with us. In, like, a one occasion kind of situation. It's like, you gotta rinse and repeat. There has to be some type of follow-up for it to work. In other words, for that desired change to be put into reality, for them to take action on the thing. I think about it, like, the webinars that I've done for career development.
Mm-hmm.
Those are good to get people's interest and, like, shift their mindset so they're open to taking action. But if they don't then take the action, they don't do something different, it's just another nice webinar with nice ideas, another nice workshop, another nice video, whatever. It doesn't make a difference for them. Because just because you hear something or get it intellectually doesn't mean you're going to apply it.
Mm.
If you don't apply it, then there isn't... that's just not the difference that I'm committed to making. And I think most people... Like, you're not trying to have the needle quiver. You want to move the needle. So you have to find ways to get people to take action, to go do something, for there to be follow-up. Otherwise, it's very unlikely to stick. And that's just, like, part of the human condition. A lot of people want to write it off. Like, well, if they don't do something about it, then, you know, that's on them. It's like, well, okay. Or you're just abdicating responsibility because it's hard. It's really hard to have these ideas stick with people and have them stick for a long period of time. So you create opportunities for follow-up. Or in our case, like, cool, you watched the webinar. Now, do you want to actually have help implementing these? Because most people don't. Do you want to be like most people or you want to take action? If you want to take action, well, we can help you do that. More than anything, like, we already gave away the special secret sauce, or at least 9% of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's, like, customize it for you and make sure you actually do it. Because you can know the best workout plan in the world. Oh, couch to 5K, easy. I've got the information. Well, if you don't get off your ass and go do it, you're never going to do it. Like, it doesn't matter. Cool, another nice idea, another nice article, another nice video. Doesn't matter. But whatever you can do to make it stick in that moment and continue, create the opportunities for follow-up where people can, continue to ask questions, or maybe it's part of a series, or maybe there's a one-on-one coaching component or something to focus on performance and action instead of just strategy, then there's a chance you really do make a difference. But most people don't do that. Even in the coaching world, I didn't do that initially. It's like, cool, this is going to be your goal for this week. And like, cool, you get the buy-in. Great. Well, if you don't talk about whether you hit those goals and why, like, why not, and dig into, okay, goal was 5, you did 2, what happened? You can't just be like, oh, next week we're going to get 6. No, maybe they'll get 3, but there's a reason that something isn't working. So if people aren't taking action on the things they need to be taking action on, you're not going to make the difference you want to make, which nobody's facilitating and coaching and doing workshops because it's, like, super lucrative. Like, it can be, but you get into it and you start it because you want to make a difference in that area. So own it and find a way to have people take action on it.
Repetition, action, follow-up.
Yeah. Whatever you need to do, doesn't matter. Have them do one, they do one thing out of the 1,000 of ideas you gave them that's better than 0.
Yep. Wow.
But we lose sight of that because, you know, why don't we just do? It's easier. It's easy to.
Absolutely. So the last question I'm going to ask you is about an impactful experience, facilitating or things like that. But is there anybody that you'd want to give a shout out to or share appreciation for? I think one of the spirits of the podcast is to be able to honor people that have either supported you or that you wanted to honor in your time while you have the digital ear.
Yeah. I want to give a shout out to 2 people. First one is a man named Andrew Lemons. Andrew was one of my bosses at the fraternity. And when it came to my development of facilitation skills, particularly my first, in all 3 jobs I had there, while most people wouldn't think of him as like an energetic, outgoing facilitator, the feedback he was able to give was so crucial to my development that it can't be understated how much value he provided for me by being critical of those things and helping me identify the areas I could grow. So first one, Andrew Lemons. Lemons, thank you. I appreciate your help in 1,000 different things, but especially facilitation. Second one is actually my business partner, Eric Fetner. Eric and I have, you know, we've worked together in some capacity for a couple of years now, but anytime he and I, many times we'll go facilitate something together, whether it's career related or something completely unrelated, he'll usually be my facilitation partner. And he has so many, like, nuggets in his brain. And I think he doesn't even know how to organize them sometimes. But like the way he's able to interact with an audience so authentically and so off script to just pull out some wisdom and have everyone have an aha moment it's incredible to witness. And it's even more incredible. I'm like, have you even read the material? He's like, well, you're the one who always keeps us on track. Like, I get the gist of it. I'm like, oh, my God. Okay, so I need to deliver the content. Eric's going to pull out all the golden nuggets. All right, let's do this. But his ability to do that, like, to read a room and to, like, dig in and sit through discomfort. I think a lot of facilitators want things to, like, go well and be liked, that they're not willing to dig into something that's a disruption and have it become a breakthrough right then and there, because it's risky. And Eric is not afraid to do that, I think because he just always knows that he's going to win. The breakthrough is going to happen. He can sit through discomfort more than anyone else, even if everyone else in the room wants to leave. he's fine with it, and he can do it, and it always ends up working.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's nuts. So that's awesome to see. I'm really looking forward to the next time we facilitate, because I'm sure he'll end up doing it again. But yeah, shout out to Eric, because he also does that in a coaching capacity, where he can just like sit through the discomfort, get people to... And sometimes it's confrontational, and sometimes it's very supportive. He can work that full spectrum, but either way, something about his ability to sift through discomfort and ask the right questions while having enough trust for someone to actually sit through it is great. It's something I admire, and I've learned a lot from him about how to do that, and I wouldn't be the coach or facilitator I am today without experiencing him doing that and getting some pointers from him. So thanks, Eric.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, I've taken up a lot of your time, Scott. And so I will just, we can end here. And I just want to say thank you for the journey that we've gone on. And I'm so happy to be able to share this with so many different people. And just the stories and the insights that you've provided have really meant a lot, man. Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you for creating the opportunity to share. You know, I said this on our little break, but I'll say it again. If people don't have the opportunity to share, that someone doesn't set the example and create that opening, they're not going to. And this is an opportunity for a lot of people to share stuff that's like real and that they deal with, their flops, like their real failures and what they made that mean for themselves. You know, this is an awesome opportunity to do that. So thank you for inviting me on. I got a lot out of it, and I hope a lot of other people will get a lot of this. And yeah, whatever guests you have on later, make sure they cry.
Yeah.
Thank you for tuning into the episode. Be sure to send me any of your feedback, what you liked, what you think could be improved. We're still in the early development process of this podcast, and so there's a lot of room to grow, and would love your feedback. Be sure to listen to part two next with Scott to hear how he scaled his career coaching business and the powerful story of how he honors his mom with meaningful experiences. Have a conscious day.